NZ On Air Music presents Long Player.
I'm Georgia Knight, and today we're going to talk through my new album, Beanpole.
How have you sort of changed as an artist going into this new album?
Almost completely. For starters, Helen Bent Street was like, it's very guitar-y. And I think when I started making Beanpole, I'd found the auto harp, and I wanted to do something completely different from any guitar music. And at first I was like, I don't want to have any guitars on it at all, but of course I broke my own rules, which is just a classic. Yeah, I think there was some time in between, and a lot happened in the world. I think I probably grew up in between those two things. Also, my musical tastes changed, and what I was able to do in the studio had developed quite a lot. And I think for the most part, I'd realised that the best thing about making music is that all you have to do is just figure it out, if you can gather together an idea of what something might be like, all you have to do is just kind of reverse engineer what you'd like to hear. And I think that between those two things, I'd gotten a little bit closer to learning how to do that. Mingle was one of the first tracks that I wrote for the album. It was also possibly the first thing that I'd done with the auto harp, and so I got that instrument, and I had this strong feeling that it could be a different tone. It didn't have to be a sort of folksy instrument. It could do more and be a little bit more gymnastic and have a sort of rhythmic place in the song, not just a kind of melodic one or the chords. I wrote that song about a kind of seduction, and I remember having this kind of interaction with someone and getting really sparky about it. When you meet people and then you sort of want to play. They set something off in your mind, and something gets sort of tantalized in the back of your head, and then you kind of want to throw it back in their face. It's a little defiant, but it's really about a kind of seduction, and whatever it is that when people meet each other and then they lock on, I think it draws down on that feeling.
Thank you.
So you know Amel and the Sniffers? Remember when that first album that really hit came out? I remember I hadn't been listening to that band, and then that album came out, and I listened to the whole thing as I was walking to Sound Park where I was recording, and I just remember thinking like, I'd love to write a song for Amy to sing. And Nick, my bass player, was really pushing me along. He was like, you know, I was a little down in the dumps, and he was like, look, you just really need to get it out of your system, like whatever it takes, like, yeah, fuck, like try and write a song for Amel and Sniffers or whatever. So it started there, but I'd had bits and pieces of lyrics. It was like a kind of poem. And then when we recorded it, I knew that I wanted it to be very rhythmically driving. And I'd heard a track by Silver Apples called Program, which I think was recorded in like, it could even be like the late 60s, early 70s. Basically, these two guys, it's almost like they were dabbling with this like breakbeat drum thing. And I heard that song Program, and it has, there's so much to this thing. There's like these like harsh radio things, and then this like driving breakbeat rhythm, and it's really addictive sounding. And so when we eventually got to the studio, I hadn't plotted out any music to play for this song. I just had this like poem, and then I just said to Holly, like, I played her in my, I like held my phone to the microphone, and I was like, look, can you try and do something like this? And then she just started playing, and then we like kind of let her. She was playing for a while, and then everyone just filed in one by one. It was the three of us, myself, Nick, and Holly. And then I think Nick was like, he might have even started playing like Riders on the Storm or something. And it was virtually all improvised. That recorded version that's on the album is like a semi-improvised musical take on this poem. I liked the idea of a kind of world, like rockabilly comes with a sense of style and a way of moving and sort of like, and a people. And I liked the idea of someone really wanting to have that, but not really being able to get into it, like not really having like anything thematic to cling onto, but just in wanting it so badly, kind of developing one anyway. You know, rockabilly is just felt kind of perfect for it because it's such a strong, it's a strong look, and the music is so distinct. And so I kind of just like was filtering through like the emotions of wanting to have a place in the world or in like, you know, in the town. And then we ended up with this track. I'd been having a time back then. I had to get away. I had needed some time away from where I was living. And so I went down. I was lucky to go and stay with my friends, Jed and Ursula, who live in Tasmania. And Jed has a studio. They live in this like kind of paradise, Paradise Valley of right on the Huon River, outside of Hobart. Jed's studio is on the water in a kind of boat shed, apple shed. And I'd gone down there and I'd like taken the auto harp with me, but I wasn't doing really well. I needed a break. And then I remember one night Jed was like, "Hey, look, like, why don't we just, do you want to do a song? And if you've got anything, you know." And I had the chorus, but none of the verses. And we did the first rounds of takes down there at Jed's studio. And you can hear him playing, I think he's playing piano and guitar on this track. You know, it's a little about like dirty laundry, you know, and what happens when it flies out the window and onto the street. It's funny because it's been a little while. And like now it's out. It's like starkly recontextualized for me at the moment. But back then, you know, there's a lot of like broken relationships on this record, and trying to find, I guess, a sense of redemption and like getting through and like getting back into your own head, but also feeling really exposed, which is pretty plain in the chorus of that song.
Nothing can shake this mood I'm in. I'm so high I could crash this car. Crash this car and come out laughing. Nothing can break my state of mind. My hair is whipping in the wind.
That's a long song. I put it right in the middle of the album because I wanted it to be like, it's sort of like the album is like a kind of dark night of the soul in a very small, wet apartment. And, you know, all the shades of things that you go through if you're sat by yourself, slinging back the wine and like getting down to, you know, like the meat of whatever's going on. This song is like, you know, right when the moon comes out from behind the cloud, I wrote it. There was an eclipse. when we were in lockdown, and it was like we're a few years in at this point, like a year and a half. And I was sitting out the front of the spot I was living, which was a block of flats that was built in like the 70s. So it's like kind of one of those like two up apartment blocks with the carport out the front, and there's a balcony railing. We were essentially all living in the same house, you know, with very thin walls in between, these little like capsules, and, you know, very private. But because we've been sort of stuck together for such a long time, it sort of became like a little bit like that. I think it's Rear Window is this movie with like the guy and with the broken leg, and he's looking and he's like a bit of a perv, and he's looking through the neighbor's windows and a murder happens, and it's a great film. But I remember sitting out the front, and I could see there's another block of flats across from where I'm living, and I can just see everyone moving past there. And each house is built exactly the same. And I remember my upstairs neighbor, sorry, this is getting very weedy, but I'm just like, it's sort of coming back to me as I'm talking to you. My upstairs neighbor died in lockdown, and it was very, very quiet but very, very tragic. And I think it just made me you know, think about like our proximity to each other. And I couldn't make sense of the it was, you know, really beautiful things and really sad things were happening with just these thin walls in between. So it ended up being like a little bit of a love letter to that apartment block.
I know that many can see straight into my room when the light is on, but I don't give a shit. I'm gonna sit here as the blood draws across the moon. When I park my car and see that woman washing her dishes again and smiling at me, it's enough. When I hear her man beating down the floor after her, I feel that I could destroy him. I know I'm closing in on something good now. Certain feeling, and I turn away 20 things for one real one. Then I know. In the upstairs kitchen, in the block across from me, something stuck to the window. Maybe it's the recipe. This morning, when everything got cold off again, I knew, I just knew. Another rotation was pulling in. And late at night, if I wake up and I hear money calling Egypt, sometimes it's laughing, sometimes it's serious. He told me he got a new deal. And sometimes he gets published in English. I know I'm closing in on something good now. And when I get that certain feeling and I turn away 20 things for one real one, then I know.
There's a wavering spot that seems to turn on and off. Like a floodlight, I'm sitting at the bottom of. Or like Morse code from heaven, someone in heaven knocked out the taillight of a car and is shining a torch through, trying to signal where they are. Above me, his place is the exact map of mine, and I hear him tracking around through the day, and I hear him getting up in the night. Is that the moon reversing its eclipse? What's he doing now? Does he regret all of this? My neighbor's husband takes another shower, although perhaps a turf sounds like the water's falling farther. I know I'm closing in on something good now. And when I get that certain feeling and I turn away 20 things for one real one, in two parts, is this the best bit? I only caught the second half. It's as though the sun is in a sling. Is this the moon's show or the sun's show? Which is the secondary thing?
Time I used to listen to this album by Talk Talk called Spirit of Eden. I'd listen to it every day. I just wanted to be inside that, like, that sonic world. And so there's a song on Spirit of Eden called Desire, and the chorus of my song is the first line of that song. I think there's something in the music that Talk Talk makes, particularly on that album, that captured this expansiveness inside, that's inside people, you know. That album by Talk Talk really was really helping me at the time. And so I kind of wanted to be inside it. And I think it was also probably about the time that the auto harp started making sense, or a little more sense as an instrument. When we came to recording it, it sort of needed to be something, quite expansive and lush. And it's just a joy. It's like a joy to play. It's sort of everything going all at once. It's like putting, you know, it's like turbo, the most turbo song on the album.
Season my soul.
This song, we ended up, I drove my car all the way up to the studio, and he connected loads of leads, and we put like a $40,000 microphone in that car, and just we're tracking it for ages. So that was the first thing we recorded for that song. So, not bad at all. This was so good to record. We basically got a big bucket of percussion stuff, and there's a really good video somewhere in my phone of Edge like ferreting around in the bucket and we were just trying to build a rhythm track, because I didn't want it to start with a rhythm track that was recognizable, especially because there's so many references on this album. Like, it's packed to the gills with references. And so I wanted this to be like, to be kind of like pulled from the ether. And it was another kind of moment of like, what kind of music can you make, you know? I also wanted to hear how harsh the auto harp could be. And it can be really fucking harsh is what I learned. The reason why it comes after Fix My Car is, you know, in the days after you tell your lie, you have to reckon with that. And you have to decide, you know, how you're gonna live your life, whether or not it comes out. I think I was also sort of like digging around in like ideas around like, what are we gonna do with all these cancelled people? You know, you remember like a couple of years ago when, you know, people were really getting cancelled left, right, and centre. And I just remember watching that and like kind of unfold online and, you know, thinking on it and just, I'm wondering like, God, I wonder what happens to all these people in the bin, you know, and like, they still have to like get up and, you know, make some lunch and, you know, if they got a kid, like they got to look up. And I wanted to find a way of kind of like rounding on that. Someone who I really look up to, like a songwriter I really look up to is Rai Kuda. He's a beautiful songwriter, but one thing that he can do is tell a kind of like dipshit romance tale with like the utmost care and attention paid to, you know, the person who put a foot wrong and continues to do so. And I really like that. I'm you know, between the like the, you know, the fairy goddess and the boss bitch, like I think there's got to be some room for the dipshits. I'd like to get there. It's songwriting, and I'm really curious about that.
What I've done, I don't rightly know. But my heart feels lighter than the blanket of snow. One night they called me up on the phone. I got a feeling.
Yeah.
I'll just, you know, make no bones about it. I like, there's a couple of through lines on this album, and one of them is a breakup, and it crops up in a lot of songs, and I've waited until right at the very end to bring it into this interview. I wrote this song very simply because it was a, you know, as you know, many of us know, like, if you're going through that kind of thing, you just, it's like your whole body's just had concrete poured into your head. And so I wanted to find a simple way, like a bit of a clear refrain to make some order of a really devastating breakup. I think what the things that are, the elements that are knocking together in this song are like tenderness and connection and an ambition. And that they can be very incongruous, and I wanted to try and like put them together in a song to see if they would if they could make sense of one another. Yeah, and I mean that was a nice recording time too. Again, Holly Thomas on drums there, doing a beautiful job, and I'm really happy with that one. I was singing into a phone because it needed to be like the last phone call. But it also ended up being, you know, in that like dark night of the soul thing, it ended up being like the early morning sunrise right at the end.
Stop looking so good in bed. I gotta get up instead. I gotta go. Stop looking so good in bed. Stop looking so
I gotta cut to the sun. fucking so good in bed. I gotta get up instead. I gotta go to work. You gotta put on a shirt. Stop looking so good in bed. Stop looking so.
That was Longplayer. Thanks, NZ On Air Music.